BFL. It's the New Football League podcast. Every week, we bring you the very best insight and opinion on all slash some things EFL. Today, Canaries crush Cov, Pompey play up, we talk Cobblers, another EFL legend takes the fit and proper guest test, we profile two EFL men to watch, and what could be more romantic than a proposal at the Hawthorns? This is episode 3 of What the EFL. Hello, listener. Welcome in. If you're joining us for the first time, thank you. If you've been here for the previous two, thank you as well. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, here to talk Football League with my two pals. Adrian Clark's back with us.
Hello, Matt.
And Sam Parkin's here too. Hi, Sam.
Hello, Matthew.
Right. We would like you to help us out, if you don't mind, please, listener. Give us a follow on Twitter at EFL WhatThe. If you want to sponsor the show, then drop us an email, whattheefl@yahoo.com. You could also do us a big favour by giving us a 5-star review on your preferred podcast platform of choice. It will help other EFL aficionados find us. Right, there's the promo done. First up today, news. Sheffield United remain top of the Championship after newly prolific Ollie McBurnie helped them to a 2-0 win at Hull. Ipswich lead the way in League One, whilst Leighton Orient sit atop League Two. Danny Schofield claimed faulty goal line technology cost his side a point against Blackpool. This was after it appeared they had scored a goal, but the technology, it said no. This morning, Monday, as we record, the EFL have confirmed the result of the game will stand despite the failure of goal line technology that denied the Terriers an equaliser. Adrian, this is just one of those things, isn't it? It's kind of unfortunate. We saw it happen in the Premier League once, didn't we? The first game after football returned, Aston Villa. But other than that, it's normally pretty spot on. It doesn't give you any consolation if you're of a Huddersfield persuasion. But I don't know, these things happen.
I feel for Huddersfield because it's a big point. You know, they need every point they can get at the moment. And yeah, my instinct was that the ball was over the line. The goalkeeper looked quite sheepish, didn't he, Grimshaw, in terms of pushing it back out. They've admitted the goal and technology didn't work. It's just a freak accident, isn't it? Things like that are going to happen every now and again. You can't change the result. You can't replay the match. That's just nonsense. They're just on the wrong end of an unfortunate piece of bad luck, really. It's like getting a bad ref call, in my opinion. So, yeah, they're going to have to move on from it quickly. There's no point dwelling on it. It won't happen that often this year.
Sam, given what we've seen in the Premier League this weekend too, is this just sort of further evidence that we don't really want any more technology in the Football League? Goal line technology is enough for us.
I don't know what I'd cover if they bring VAR into the EFL. That would mean me done. Rugby is the answer to that. I really wouldn't want it to go further than this. Obviously, I think goal line technology is something that we've always championed. I certainly have always, and this is just an isolated incident. As sore as it is for Huddersfield this morning, invariably they get this right. Seeing the footage does beg the question how all the officials have missed it live, because it looks like the goalkeeper is in the rigging itself. So it's a shocking one. It's a bad decision. But it doesn't happen too often. So hopefully we're not going to have calls for technology, because the game is pretty darn great as it is.
Here's a much more pleasant story, or cheery story at least. An emotional day at St James's Park. Jay Stansfield made his Exeter debut. He's on loan from Fulham. He wore the number 9 shirt previously worn by his late father, Adam. That number was retired after Adam died of bowel cancer, aged just 31 in 2010. Jay was born in Exeter, started at their academy before moving to Fulham in 2019, from where he's on loan. Grecian's boss, Matt Taylor, said, "I don't think I can describe it in terms of words, to be honest with you. It means everything to us, so it must mean even more to him." He had tears in his eyes, didn't he, Adrian, at the end of the game? Astonishing amount of emotion, I'm sure. So he did well to get through it. But out of such a tragedy, this is quite a heartwarming story.
It really is heartwarming. I played against his dad, Adam Stansfield, and he was a wonderful striker. Absolutely brilliant. I played against him in the FA Trophy final. Stevenage against Yeovil, he was sensational, and it was such a tragedy what happened to him. And I don't know how Jay got through it, really, but it's a brilliant feel-good story, but it's also a great move for both parties, I think, particularly for Exeter. This kid played at Emirates last weekend. I was there. He came on as a sub in the Premier League, and there he is rocking up at Exeter a week later. wearing his dad's number nine shirt. It's remarkable. But I think he can do some good things down there. I think he can shine. If you're good enough to play in the Premier League, you're good enough to be a real star, I think, at League One level. So, yeah, I wish Exeter and Jay Stansfield all the best in the weeks to come. It must have been very emotional.
Sam, it's a club you know well from your time there. I'm guessing this will help people who were there then and who are there now in terms of the grieving process. It's a way to help move on, if nothing else.
Yeah, absolutely. Someone I spoke to the staff a lot about, really. He was someone that Paul Tisdale used as an example of what he wanted from his front player, which was always quite interesting. Always referred back to his skill set, but also the type of guy he was as well. Very selfless, I think, hard worker for the team. Quality player. So, yeah, incredibly tragic. And, you know, because of the time I went to Exeter, you know, not long after then, I've always kept an eye on his lad. And, you know, covering the Fulham games as I do, I know how highly thought of he is there. I remember that goal, I think it was at Birmingham a couple of years ago now. So it shows you he's been knocking on the door, really, at Fulham for a couple of seasons. So this hasn't come from nowhere, these couple of appearances in the Premier League that Clarkie spoke of. And I think he hit the bar in the game against Brentford. Dekel Davareed put in the rebound. So as you know, we've been saying, this is a great signing for Exeter. And I'm sure Matt Taylor, the manager, will know the family really well. He'll have monitored the lad. So it ticks loads of boxes. But I'd say more so for the quality of the player going down to that level. And, you know, you'd like to think he's going to play a good amount of games and he could be a future star. So I think just a story that has kind of united everyone in the EFL that follows any club. You saw the reaction on social media. You just can't not be touched by this. So, yeah, great footage over the weekend. Loved it.
Speaking of transfers, the window has shut since we did our podcast last week. So I thought I'd ask the chaps to pick a move that maybe's gone a bit under the radar that they're excited about. Clarkie, you've gone for Tahit Chong. I was surprised by this. Saw a lot of this kid in the Man United Academy. He'd had a loan at Birmingham previously. Now he's there to stay.
Exactly, yeah. It shocked me that Birmingham were able to attract him. He's 22, so he's at that age. I think I was a similar age when I left Arsenal, where you've had a little taste of it. You've done all right, but you haven't quite done enough to stay there and be part of the plans. So you have to move and you have to go and find your football elsewhere. And I think Birmingham have done well to get him. And obviously from his end, he knows the club. The fans have a good relationship with him. I think from a tactical point of view, when I watched Birmingham in the flesh, they were weak in midfield, had a few youngsters in there, didn't have much creativity at all. But at the weekend, they had Bielik as the sort of central guy with Bakuna and Chong either side. And I do like that unit. I think that's a really good engine room. It'll pass the ball well. It'll link moves. He'll add creativity. And I think under Eustace and playing first team football, he will develop and improve. So, yeah, it's a bit of an eye-raising signing. That the Blues, and I think it shows that the Blues don't just want to survive this year. They want to thrive in the Championship.
Sam, you've gone for Callum Stiles, the, what is he, Bulgaria international? Not Harry's brother, that one?
Is he? I didn't even get
Hungarian, my friend.
Is he? I didn't That's know right, that.
Yeah. Didn't he play exceptionally well against England? I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did at Wembley.
I'm normally fast asleep watching England.
Yeah, I'm sure he did. You can tell by the way I'm describing this that I don't think I was particularly across the game. But yeah, he's become a full international. And this one's gone incredibly under the radar, so much so that I don't believe I knew it had happened until I saw him running out of the den at the weekend. So incredible signing. Big part of obviously Valerian Ismail's Barnsley, one of the most pivotal players in that system, wide on the left hand side. Him and the other Callum Britton were sensational that year, and he's not really maintained it in terms of his club form last year, taking huge strides obviously on the international stage. And yeah, I think this is just a great signing for Millwall in a position they definitely need to strengthen. Scott Malone's obviously kind of nailed down that position for what seems like an eternity now. And it was Stiles and Shackleton, the two wide boys. So loads of legs there. 22 Callum Styles. Shackleton, I would suggest, slightly younger than that. Played that position for Bielsa at Leeds before. Bags of energy, creativity. Callum Styles capable of getting you a goal. And I think a tenacious little character who the Millwall fans will love watching. So I've been really impressed with Gary Rowett's business, you know, in the forward positions, but strengthening across the piece now.
Two players to look out for then over the course of the coming season, Callum Styles and Tahith Chong. Right, next today, we're going to take a look back at the best of the weekend's action. We're going to pick a couple of games that caught our eye from the weekend just past. In the Championship, Adrian's gone for Norwich 3, Coventry 0, a Canaries cruise against Cov at Carrow Road, all the seas. They've shaken off that hangover from last season, haven't they now, Clarkie? This one was pretty much all over by half-time.
Yes, Norwich doing Norwich things in the Championship, isn't it? It's like going back in time a couple of seasons and then going back in time a couple of seasons after that. The counter-pressing, absolutely relentless in the first half. Obviously, different manager now, but I always associate Norwich's success with being hungry to win the ball back quickly inside the opposition half, and then to quickly break on goal, and that's what we saw in this game. I think Marcelino Núñez looks a real player in central midfield for Norwich. Great press and steal, and he was the one that released Pukki for sort of trademark 1v1 finish. Aaron Ramsey, not that one, but the brother of Jacob at Villa, looks similar to his brother. Jacob makes great runs from deep. I thought the part he played in the goals was really good. I think it was the second goal in particular that he was excellent for. So yeah, Norwich City, this was an excellent performance. And you look at the numbers-wise, they're on fire. They've had 16 more shots than anyone in open play. They've got the best XG. And this is the most interesting one for me. So the way your attack gets broken up into sort of build-up attacks, direct attacks, slow attacks, whatever. They've had the most build-up attacks, which is like a long period of possession before they create a chance. They've had the most. I'm not surprised by that. But they're also number two in the rankings for direct attacks, which is where you go from back to front really quickly in the blink of an eye, like a counter-attack. So they can hurt you either way, Norwich City, and I think that, yeah, they're going to take some shifting from the promotion race this season. As for Coventry, a bit baffled by the team selection with Jokeres on the bench. I thought they looked quite bright, but ultimately they were a little bit outclassed by Norwich.
Yeah, four defeats on the bounce for them now. Mark Robins, plenty of credit in the bank, but he needs to get a win at some point. And I think Timo Pukki's now got to be our go-to reference for someone too good for the champ, not good enough for the PL. Sorry, Cameron, Jerome, Roberts, or Darren Huckabee. What is it about Norwich and these kind of people? Bristol City, meanwhile, so many problems at home last season for them. Here they picked up their first away win of the campaign. It was 3-2 against Blackburn, a thriller of a game. Nicky Wells got two of the goals here. Sam, I find it kind of difficult to warm to Nigel Pearson because he's so bloody prickly in his interviews, but he deserves credit, doesn't he, for City's start. Only 2 points behind Norwich, unbeaten since losing the first two now.
Called someone an ostrich, how can you not like him? Tremendous. This was brilliant. I watched large portions of this, and the first half, every time they attacked, they were just opening Blackburn up, looked like they were going to score. Wells should have had two alone in the first half. They were sensational, brilliant stuff. I loved the first two goals. Scott with the individual brilliance and the pass. Weimann playing as a number 10 now, which allows them to get the front two in Wells and Conway into the side. Was brilliant approach play. Put it on a plate, the first one for Conway. And then the second one was similarly brilliant as well. Scott is just poetry when you watch him for a young player. And he was obviously up against young Wharton, who had an amazing debut for Blackburn last time out, but showed him up a little bit. A few of these little drops of the shoulder and the quick feet and stuff like that kind of bamboozled his opposite number. So, yeah, brilliantly taken goals. Unbeaten in eight, joint top scorers. And interestingly, given what Clarkie was just saying about Norwich, I think somewhat outperforming the statistics. 12th for shots, Bristol City. 1.34 is their average XG for, and obviously they're averaging two goals per game, joint top scorers in the division. So is it sustainable, or have they just got some brilliant finishers in rich vein of form at the moment? I'd probably go a little bit with the latter, just because I am excited by this side. I think they're brilliant to watch. I love the transfer business, not only this summer, but the last few windows. Atkinson and Sykes from Oxford coming in. Kyle Naismith from Luton. I just think Kane Wilson from Forest Green. I think they've identified younger lads, lower divisions, and think we can work with these guys. But I think this season may just be too soon, considering that Scott, Masengo, Conway, Semenyo are going to have to play so many games. So really excited by them, but not quite sure I'm convinced they're the real deal just yet.
Alex Scott, lots of potential. Will he be presenting the one show and Football Focus and the news and everything like his namesake soon? No, of course he won't. In League One, Pompey versus Posh was the letter P enthusiast pick. That's not why Adrian chose it, though. Richly rewarding game, mainly for Portsmouth, who continued to keep pace with the leaders, Ipswich, after a 2-1 win here. What about Peterborough, though, Clark? You know, we kind of thought they'd be doing that thing of bouncing back, or looking like they were going to do so, but four defeats on the spin for them, and particularly struggling away from home.
Yeah, lost three away games now, so not great for them and for McCann. Slightly imbalanced, I think, the team with Frankie Kent is having to do a job on the left side of a back three. Don't think he's wholly comfortable there, and didn't have a great game at the weekend, nor did Burrows on that side either. They're very reliant on the front two as well, aren't they, with Johnson, Clark, Harris and Marriott. I think but they're having to kind of create their own chances at the moment, which is interesting. I thought Fuchs looks good, Giando Fuchs in central midfield. Decent player. But yeah, just defensively not quite secure enough at the moment, Peterborough, when the going gets tough. And it is tough at Fratton Park at the moment, because the atmosphere's hot, the crowd are up. They've signed some excellent players. Really, really good window for them. And up front, they've got a very promising duo, in my opinion. Colby Bishop, you know, hardworking, big, strong, you know, proven goal scorer at that level. And alongside him, Dane Scarlett on loan from Spurs. Just amazing. A tremendous talent. Only 18. It's Scarlett mania down there at the moment. I think everyone fears he's going to be recalled.
Scarlet fever, surely. Goodness me. Come on, don't you know your Victorian illnesses?
I don't, actually, but that's, yeah, you're absolutely right to correct me. 4 goals in 8 days. Yeah, so Scarlet fever's definitely happening. But yeah, Josh Caroma, you know, Lowry, Dale from Crewe, Marlon Pack looks really dominant at that level. So yeah, this was a big win, I think, for Portsmouth, because come the end of the season, Portsmouth and Peterborough will both be in the shake-up, I would imagine. In terms of numbers, it's just all about the attacking play from Pompey under the Cowleys. Not that pretty, quite direct, but everything they're doing is done with positive intent. It's about hurting the other team. I think they're the top scorers, 15 goals. A few of those are set pieces, but yeah, really, really good start for Portsmouth this year.
Elsewhere, sub Sam Cosgrove scored twice on debut for Plymouth. They sealed a stunning come-from-behind win against Derby at Pride Park. What was it about East Midlands teams chucking away 2-goal leads this weekend? Sam, it's been a good response from Plymouth, hasn't it? Because obviously they had that heartbreak at the end of last season, but they're looking like they might be there or thereabouts again this time round, despite Clarkie's opinions on the matter.
Matt, we're really good mates, I would say, now in this game of ours. Why is it on debut all of a sudden and not on his debut?
I agree.
It might be an Americanism, that, to be fair. That's
got to stop in it, Clarkie. Yeah.
We can't have Americanisms taking over. All right? It's, you know, they can't help us improve football.
I'm hearing some of the most respected commentators in the country, of which Matt is one, going down this route as well. So it needs to be
brought
up. Yeah, but
Matt likes wrestling. So there's issues there to address. So, you know, well, none of us are perfect, but, you know.
Right, back to Sam Cosgrove on debut. The second one was a dream, wasn't it? The outside of the right foot. Cashin, I think it was the Derby defender who gave him the chance, but just shows you what a goal gives you, because he has been, I haven't got the figures in front of me, unfortunately, but I think it was 2 in his last 35. And he's got 2 in the second half at Derby. And yeah, brilliant, Matt. I think, up to third now. They've beaten every relegated side from the Championship. Posh, Barnsley and now Derby, they've got to be taken seriously. And I just thought brilliant tactical awareness from the manager, pressed them, really aggressive, went 2-0 behind, completely against the run of play, by all accounts. Liam Rossini was very honest after the game, best team won, continued to press them, forced Derby long, and on the turnovers in the second half, caused them real problems. I thought selection-wise as well, Whittaker, ex-Derby, played him as one of the 10s alongside Danny Meyer. That's really clever management. You know, someone with a bit of a point to prove. He was excellent. And then affecting it with your substitutions as well. Ennis, Cosgrove, on to cause absolute havoc. Ennis in particular, I think, laid the first one on. He's had a brilliant start to the season. But we know that Plymouth have got great options in attack, great options in number 10 position, so much so that Azaz was left out of this game as well. Job really well done. Not overly concerned about Derby because two really tight games that they've lost, but this one particularly galling for the supporters considering the position they were in.
Into League Two we go then. Bradford City remain unbeaten at home in the league. They picked up the dub against the Walsall side on the slide. 2-1 the score here. Adrian, I don't know if you're feeling cup half full or half empty today and whether you want to go fulsome on the praise for Sparky's mob or if you want to worry about what's happening to Mike.
Not necessarily either. I think that Bradford have built a whole new team. So I think they had eight new signings in there, 11 at the weekend. It wasn't the best performance. It was a bit disjointed. They were really reliant, I think, on the goalkeeper, Harry Lewis, who they brought in from Southampton. I think he's had an exceptional start to the season. So he's a name to sort of keep your eye on. Harry Lewis in goal for Bradford City. Jake Young's had a good week. He scored a great goal in this match, having belted in two in midweek. So yeah, look, they're going okay. They're going okay. Andy Cook. I think if Andy Cook's in the goals, they're always going to have chances of climbing the table, and he's got 4-4. So I think Bradford aren't playing that brilliantly yet, but they're ticking over in terms of results. From Walsall's end, they were very unlucky here. 24 shots to 9. So, and I think in the previous match, they'd had a lot of efforts on goal and missed them. And the manager, Flynn, has been bemoaning a sort of lack of ruthlessness. One of his quotes was quite interesting. I don't know where you stand on this, Sam and Matt. Is this a legitimate sort of thing to say? He says, "You've got to step on their throats." I mean, it just strikes me as you don't step on a throat. You've got to step on their throats. When you've got an opportunity to kill them off, you've got to do it. I mean, it's quite an unusual thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't really think of what the right terminology would be. When you initially said it, I thought stand on their toes, but that's not aggressive enough, is it, for what he's going for?
I think he's probably tried to pare it back a bit because he thought if he said you've got to strangle them, then that's a bit distasteful. So he's ended up mixing his metaphors, which is a shame. But listen, hopefully he'll learn from that and move on. Northampton 3, Barrow 1 is the game that caught your eye in League 2, Sam. I don't know if this is just Sam's solidarity, but you reckon Hoskins is the best player in the division?
Well, if I said that, I certainly didn't mean it. He's not the best player in the division. He's the most informed player right now. I think that was probably the tail end of my shift, wasn't it? So I was probably getting a little bit leggy.
A bit long day, isn't it, over there?
Getting a bit leggy, yeah. No, he's their talisman, isn't he? But he's having a bit of a purple patch towards the twilight of his career. I haven't done him a disservice there, but I think he's getting on a fair bit. He's been outstanding. Another good goal, but it was actually the two that followed that absolutely killed the game and gave Northampton the opportunity to manage it brilliantly. It included a brilliant change, took off a striker, brought on Sowerby, the midfielder, went one up to see it over the line, and Barrow didn't really threaten in the last 20 minutes, just the one shot, I think, on the target. And the reason I wanted to highlight this game was, you know, doing a bit of reading, watching the highlights back. Barrow leave this defeat with loads of credit. I've seen countless Northampton fans say this is the best side we've played this season. That's why those two goals were so imperative in this victory, because Barrow had more shots. They could have been arguably two or three goals up before Hoskins opened the scoring. This was by no means a run-of-the-mill Northampton home victory where they've bullied a team. This was very much a good footballing match between two sides I now believe are probably going to be right up there end of the season. I want to highlight two players, Mark Leonard on loan from Brighton, brilliant in Northampton's midfield, and Kieran Bowie, whichever way you want to play it. Did very, very well in the absence of Danny Hilton. And I like his story, 19-year-old at Fulham. He's on loan from Fulham, and he was signed from Raith Rovers after firing them to the Scottish League One title. So looks like another good bit of business from Fulham, learning his trade in the third tier right now.
You'll always get praise from Parkin if you dip your toe into the world of Scottish football at some point.
Fourth tier.
That was the weekend that was. Up next, another contestant tries to pass the fit and proper guest test. Right, it's the fit and proper guest test. Every week we welcome one of our friends from the wide world of English football and see if they can make the grade by answering our series of super tough questions. Today is the turn of the former Crewe, Norwich and West Ham striker turn pundit Dean Ashton. Welcome, Dean.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. Right, here we go. First question I've got, and I'm sure the answer to this is yes in great detail, but do you remember your first goal in the EFL?
Absolutely, yes, I do. It was against Burnley at home. I remember, I think, Paul Cook, I think, scored a penalty for them and was constantly on at the referee. They got a player sent off, Mark Rivers, little slipped ball down the right-hand side, kept myself onside, threw on goal, rifled it between the keeper's legs and celebrated to all of six people behind the stand, two of which were my mate's mum and dad.
putting the cherry on top of the cake in a 4-2 win. Lovely. All right, so that was your first goal. What was your best goal?
Ooh, for Crewe?
For anybody.
For anybody, okay. I mean, I think to score an overhead kick at Old Trafford, at the Stretford end, having been brought up sort of half an hour, 40 minutes from Manchester with lots of mates who are Manchester United fans, and getting a clap from the Stretford end, I think definitely takes some beating to shrug Rio Ferdinand off and score past Van der Sar. But it was a shame that we were 3-0 down because of Rooney, Tevez and Ronaldo. But yeah, that takes some beating, that's for sure.
You know, just taking you back to Crewe, it's something that I've spoken to you about before. What's the one thing you took throughout your career in terms of your the way you were taught to play football, obviously coming through at Crewe, the way they like to do things? What was the one thing that when you stepped out on the pitch, invariably you did throughout your playing days?
I think probably trust my technique. I think that was
such a huge part of what we did as an academy and what Crewe stood for, and Dario Gradi and the way that he wanted to play, was that it shouldn't be about whacking it long. It should be about you being able to have the belief to control the ball properly, to do the right things. If you see something, be able to do it. And so throughout my career, I never shied away from maybe doing something that was maybe more difficult because I trusted my ability, and that was through hours of practicing all the different techniques that Crewe used to do when we were younger, and therefore I think I managed to do that in my career. In terms of the more difficult things, I would try and a lot of the times I'd be able to pull it off because of that.
Dean, I think we all miss the dressing room a little bit, and not every aspect of it, but you know, they're good days being part of that group. Just wanted to ask you what was the best or liveliest dressing room that you were part of? There might be two different ones, I guess. Best and liveliest.
I mean, I think that they're all lively in their own way. I think you'll certainly vouch for when you go into dressing rooms, there is a big thing about North and South, the North-South divide and how how people act. So when I went to West Ham, that to me was just a massive culture shock, as in how confident the players were, you know, how brash they were, everything by the way they dressed, the way they took the mick out of it. It was just so different to anything I'd ever experienced. But I loved it because I'm quite laid back, quite quiet. I could just sit there, listen to it, watch it. I absolutely loved being part of that West Ham dressing room. And it was epitomised by the manager, Pardew, who was, you know, his nickname was Chocolate for a reason because he wanted to eat himself. He absolutely, he was so much confidence oozing out of him. And it just fed into the players. And yeah, I love being part of that dressing room and you know, and sort of dressing room where everyone knew they were good. And therefore, day in, day out, it was about everyone proving that they were the best. And I loved it.
And one more on your playing career. What meant more to you, scoring in the FA Cup final or making your England debut? Because your England debut could have come a couple of years before, of course.
I think if you'd have asked me that at the time, then the England debut would have surpassed it by a long way. But the more the years go on, the more the FA Cup final goal, I think, means more to me, just because of it is rare that
you get to play in a final. And I've noticed that since I've retired, there's just not that many opportunities to play in finals and score in finals in such a showpiece and do something. I always wanted to do something that would be remembered. Now the game will be remembered, but I guess to people close to me and things like that, that'll be remembered as something they can think back on. And I'd done, and it was just, yeah, it was an incredible goal. I think not in terms of technique, but an incredible goal in terms of meaning.
Dido, jumping onto your post-playing career, best ground to work at, taking into the grub, of course, in the press room into account.
Well, I mean, Chelsea's amazing for
the grub. I would definitely say that. But Tottenham is a whole new world. It is like it looks. It's like a spaceship has landed and it's just incredible. I mean, the commentary positions have got carpet, which is ridiculous. You know, they're just so spacious. They're perfectly aligned where you'd want to be as a co-coms or an analyst. There's carpet on the floor. I mean, it's just, and the sort of the gangways are like a London bar, and the cafe is like, you know, it's like something out of Harrods. It's just, yeah, it's class.
Yeah, that's enough praise for Tottenham. Let's knock that on the head. Go on. While we're on this, then let's name and shame the worst. What's the worst EFL ground to cover a game? You know, where they don't give you any food or it's cramped. You spill the beans.
Ooh, EFL ground. That is difficult, I think.
Remember, Dean's got to go back to this ground. Club.
Exactly.
And the problem is, they're all so nice. I mean, the Everton, in terms of Premier League, Everton's the worst because I can't sit properly. I have to do the splits pretty much while I'm sat. EFL, I'm not sure because I can't. They're so nice to everyone. The EFL.
Have you had to go back to Ipswich ever to cover a game?
No, thankfully not yet. I'm sure that'll come up at some point.
Yeah, and that'll test your niceness theory. Right, you've had lots of hard hitting questions. We like to finish with a really difficult one though. So here's yours, Dean. Which do you prefer, Ashton Kutcher or Ashton Underline?
I would say Ashton Underline because I used to go there quite a bit with my dad for work and used to take a ball and practice while he was working. So Ashton Underline, definitely.
100% your dad said this place is named after us at some point when you were young and impressionable.
Yeah, he did, you're right.
What do we think, Clarky Sam, has Dean passed the fit and proper guest test?
Oh, for recounting his first ever EFL goal in such detail, that's a man after my own heart. He's passed with flying colours there, isn't he?
I'm a big fan of Dean, you know that. But I think he's only just scraped through because he had the opportunity to stick the boot in and be a bit mean to a club, but he bottled it. So he's scraped through. But yeah, next time we get you on, we'll ask you some even harder questions.
I'll dig someone out.
Dean, I think you passed with flying colours. Thanks so much for joining us today. We'll see you on the telly again soon, no doubt.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks, fellas.
All right. It's our scouting report then, where we pick a couple of players who might have escaped your attention but won't do soon because they're about to burst on the scene if they haven't already in the EFL. Adrian, you're a man after my own heart here. Not only have you picked somebody with a double-barreled surname, but it is a name that is just wonderful to say. Brooke Norton Cuffey, on loan at Rotherham from Arsenal. Tell me more.
Yeah, well, he's Arsenal Scholar of the Year. He's only 18, but he's a player. He is a real prospect. So a lot of the time, Arsenal will loan out players to the EFL that they're not sure about. Maybe it'll be it will be the precursor to a move away from the club, but that's definitely not the case with Norton Cuffey, who should really be in the under-23s at the moment. But I think he's such a good prospect that the Gunners want to get him out there. He was at Lincoln last season, had an exceptional loan spell there. He's big, he's strong, imposing, excellent in 1v1s. Hard to sort of get around because he's built sturdily, but he's also quick. And then in possession, I mean, there is a real talent there. There's a bit of Jed Spence about him. There's a little bit of Reece James as well in his game with the power. And from what I've seen of Brooke Norton Cuffey, it's his feet. He's a wonderful little dribbler. I mean, he's a huge guy, but he's a great dribbler, quick feet, loves to take players on. And I was looking at some of the stats on debut for Rotherham. That's where he is at the moment, against Birmingham. 9 dribbles. Against Sunderland, he played right wing back, left wing back, 8 dribbles. He even had 4 against Watford, which is a really tough game. So if you compare him to all the other fullbacks in the division, I think he's third highest for the amount of times he takes defenders on and beats them. So yeah, this is, and once he gets into those areas, by the way, he has got good delivery. He's made a lot of goals for Lincoln and for the England junior teams, whipping it along the face of goal. So yeah, really fascinating to see how he gets on at Rotherham this season. Different style of football to what he's accustomed to at Arsenal, but I think it will do him good. And I think that he's kind of tailor-made for that team. So, yeah, I think, yeah, keep your eye on him. Brooke Norton Cuffey, definitely a player we're going to be hearing a lot about in the future.
Excellent. Sam, you've gone for Aaron Henry of Charlton. I'm wondering if this is because he scored against your beloved QPR.
Well, unless you were taking in games at Wildstone last year, you might not have come across this lad. He's in fact only played 9 minutes in League One this season. Started in the League Cup against Walsall. But yeah, I saw him against QPR in the League Cup, and I saw him again in the Football League Trophy against Gillingham the other day. He was only 19 last Wednesday, the day of that game. Scored again. Incredible performance. The best player on the pitch by distance. The fulcrum of the midfield. Gets on the ball straight away, played a crossfield 60-70 yard ball, inch perfect to someone's feet, plays short little passes, he's tenacious, and he's got an eye for a goal. Scored 2 free kicks during this loan spell at Wildstone last season, already got 2 in his very sparse appearances so far this year, and I really like the look of him. Like I said, the range of passing's there. He's got that goal-scoring ability to shoot from distance. And the 3 goals last week involved in all 3. Short corner for the first. He played a lovely little disguise ball for the second goal. It was kind of the pre-assist because it was a rebound that was knocked in by Lee Byrne ultimately. And he capped it with the third with a brilliant strike. So it looks like a really good prospect. This is where it gets interesting. He's out of contract in the summer. And Ben Garner was, you know, talking him up in the press in the wake of that performance against Gillingham. But maybe there's just something going on behind the scenes. I've seen a Charlton fan refer to Joe Aribo, different stages of their career, granted. But Joe Aribo saw his contract out and moved off to Rangers. So it's something I'm sure they want to get done. He's a young lad that came from Arsenal a few years ago. And obviously just started to get some game time for Charlton, but not breaking his way into the first 11 or even the 18 at the weekend for Charlton. So something going on there behind the scenes. Hopefully for the Charlton fans' sake, he can get signed up and he can start to deliver in the first team because he looks like a player.
Right, so that's Brooke Norton Cuffey and Aaron Henry, players to watch out for over the course of the season. Another scouting report next week. Next today, we'll look ahead to some of the crunch clashes this weekend. Well, here's a fixture that we're not going to talk about. Burton Albion versus Fleetwood in League One on Saturday. I'm going to break some news to you now, Clarkie, which Sam has filled me in. It's not going to be breaking news for our listeners, but for you, I'd love a live reaction. Club statement time from Burton Albion. Burton Albion can confirm that Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank has resigned as manager. Dino Marmria will initially take charge of first team matters. Not really a surprise, I guess, this is it. They've only had one win all season, and that was in the Pizza Cup against Leicester's kids. So they didn't have a great end to last season. They've started even worse this time round. Maybe this is best for everybody.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a shocker, hasn't it? They've been leaking goals for fun. Obviously, the guy that was scoring all the goals, Hadme, was then sold to Ipswich as well. That was probably the straw that broke the camel's back. Yeah, I think it's quite honourable for Jimmy to resign rather than sort of be fired, so to speak. He's trying to fall on his sword. So he's a good guy, has a very good relationship with Burton Albion. He's had two spells there now, of course. And it's a pity it hasn't worked out. But yeah, I think most of us had Burton down for a struggle this season, and that's the way it's turning out.
I wonder who at the end of their careers is going to have managed one club more times, Darren Ferguson at Peterborough or Jimmy Floyd at Burton. It's an attractive-ish job, isn't it, Sam? At that level, you get a great training ground to use, if nothing else.
Yeah, I think all jobs are, aren't they, in the Football League? There's not many of them, and there's so many people that are after them. They'll have hundreds and hundreds of applicants by the end of the week, you would imagine. And yeah, quite a noble way to depart. You wouldn't have wanted to see it get ugly because he'd done such sterling work there. And it'd be interesting to see if Dino Marmria remains at the club. I'm sure Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank won't be short of offers, television work, whatever he wants to do. Someone like Dino Marmria, probably, needs that job like all of us do. So hopefully the staff will be able to remain. But it's unlikely that Burton is going to appoint a new manager and say you can bring six members of staff in. So it's likely that some of those guys may stick around. But yeah, it'll probably be it's a very attractive job, and it's not too late for them to turn things around this season. They need to get back to being defensively what they were initially under Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank and get tight and get a few little 1-0s and get up and running for the season.
Yeah, Dino Marmria has managed before, hasn't he, at Stevenage? So he's got a bit of experience, and I'm sure he's ready to throw his hat into the ring.
Let's get on to our weekend previews then. We're going to start in the Championship. The Friday night game looks to be the standout fixture. It's Burnley against Norwich at Turf Moor. A win for Norwich here would take them top of the table. How are you feeling about Vincent Kompany's Burnley, Clarkey, because they chucked 3 points away right at the death at West Brom on Friday, but they only lost once this season, but then they've drawn 3 of 4 at home. I can't make my mind up.
No, me neither. It's a big change of style. Obviously, we talked about that before. They are making mistakes. They've been quite naive. They've been caught in possession inside their own half a lot. They've given a lot of goals away that maybe they won't be giving away in a few weeks' time or a few months' time. So I think that they need to stick with it and just get better at what Vincent Kompany is asking them to do, because it's been a heck of a change. They're creating plenty. I think they've got the third best XG. I really like the axis at the top end of the pitch, Rodriguez, and you've got Teller, who's probably coming in off the left. Vitinho, an exciting dribbler, proper winger on the right. And then Josh Brownhill in behind. Brownhill's been on fire, hasn't he? I mean, He scored some good goals already. He's creating chances. So, yeah, there's a lot to like about Burnley. They've got the individual talent. They've got a manager that's clearly coaching them well. It's just a matter of stopping the mistakes. If this was a Premier League game, none of us would be excited about this last year. But I think it'd be a great game. You've got Kompany that's going to go for it with that style of play. And Norwich are top of the league, well, right up there in the top of the league, and they're a good footballing side too. So this could be a good watch.
Yeah, wasn't last season, 0-0 at Turf Moor when they met in the Prem. Interesting sort of diverging approaches, Sam, from the two clubs. Obviously, Mike, don't call him Michael Jackson, replaced Sean Dyche for the end of the season for Burnley. But Norwich got Dean Smith in early, and you kind of wondered at the end of last season if that might be a mistake, because they were terrible even when they brought him in. But actually, are we seeing the benefit of that now, that you know, he knows the squad, he knows the club a little bit better, he's had that pre-season, and after a whiffy start, they look like the form horse again in the division.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, marry that with some of the signings from last year, Sargent being the obvious one, who you know, was bought because probably his potential and because of what he'd be able to do in the Championship, I'm sure. You know, he wasn't going to be a ready-made Premier League player. So we're seeing that come to the fore now in the second tier. I think it's a big year for Dean Smith. Every year is, I'm sure, as a manager. I don't need me to tell them that. But, you know, Walsall, Brentford, it was an upward trajectory. Went to Villa, obviously, which was his club. So it kind of fitted in that regard. This is the first time maybe that he's been under, you know, considerable pressure from the off, from the outset. Got maybe a little bit of time at Villa because of those reasons I just stated. Not to say that, you know, he wouldn't have wanted to get off to a good start, and he needed to. But I just believe here, you know, a couple of months of average performances, they'd probably be, you know, calling for his head. So this has been a really quick and a really good turnaround from them. I still don't think they're the finished article. I think they're still a bit patched up. I think that defensive midfield area will be improved no end when Isaac Hayden gets fit. Left back, they've got a right footer playing left back at the moment. So they'll improve there when they get all their players available. But they're still really exciting to watch. And yeah, this will be a brilliant game. Be a brilliant game. The two most possession-heavy teams in the division, two of the highest scorers. They won't go play for a point, Norwich. And the front four is really clicking. Ramsey, Cantwell, Sargent, Pukki, they've shown now that they can all play in that side. We question whether Pukki and Sargent could get in the same team. Sargent looked brilliant off the right-hand side. So all the makings of a classic Friday night.
Let's hope so. Speaking of East Anglia-based football clubs, Ipswich host Cambridge in League One. Ipswich, the early season pace setters. Cambridge tucked nicely in fifth too. Sam, Ipswich unbeaten so far. This might be the toughest test they've faced, though, and their home record actually not great. Only won one of three thus far.
Yeah, I think this is going to be the difficulty that presents itself throughout the season, playing against a side like Cambridge, who are brilliant at what they do. And they won this fixture 1-0, tail end of last season, one of Kieran McKenna's few defeats in the Ipswich dugout. So, and fundamentally, a lot of the team, they've improved, don't get me wrong, the squad, but a lot of the same guys would have featured in that performance for both sides. So it'll be relatively fresh in the memory. They'll have improved under Kieran McKenna. Like, his methods will be firmer in their brains and their skill sets, but it'll still be up to, I suppose, some of the newer players to make that difference. Someone like Harness, fantastic at the weekend. Ladapo coming on and affecting the game no end, and they've got such an array of forward options. Don't think that there's going to be anyone particularly free scoring for them. Don't think it'll probably matter. They look the best side because of those options and because defensively how sound they are. So I'm interested to see how this plays out. I think the early goal completely changes the dynamic. If Cambridge can go in at 0-0, you never know, because of those relative struggles that the Ipswich have had this season at home.
I was speaking to Matt Holland the other day in the press lounge at Arsenal, and we were talking about Ipswich, and he was saying he sometimes goes and watches because he's quite local. He's obviously a bit of an Ipswich legend. So he just sometimes goes and watches training. And he said, I couldn't speak highly enough of Kieran McKenna. He said that rarely has he ever seen, and he's seen a lot of dressing rooms, he's been on a lot of training grounds, rarely have I ever seen a group of players as engaged with a coach as Ipswich players are with McKenna. They love working with him, and they listen to his ideas, and they want to get on board with everything he's asking them to do. And that's such a healthy place to be. So even if results do fluctuate, I think that the players are very much on board with this guy in charge.
It's only a small thing, Clarkie, but after the game at Burton, I think it was, one of the recent away games. They toiled in the first half. He came out after the game and just spoke about the changes that he made at halftime. Really eloquent, really descriptive. And I think that shows a manager who's really comfortable in their own skin, because obviously everyone's going to hear that and probably react to that in future weeks. And if you've got different tactics, if you've got everything in your armory, you're not going to be put off by being quite open with the press. And I think the supporters really engage with that. Mick Beale's been similarly vocal in the same regard at QPR. And the fans love that because it's honest and you learn a few things as well as I do listening to it.
Yeah, the 5-sub rule helps Ipswich more than any other team in the division. No doubt about that. He can then keep 17, 18 players happy and interested because he can use them and mix and rotate them. So I think that helps them big time.
Yeah, you are happy, aren't you? If you're coming on for 20 minutes, half an hour, that keeps you sweet, really, to keep producing.
Exactly. On Cambridge, look, very good. They've been outstanding at home. They'll be high energy in this game. They'll be aggressive. They'll be quite direct. They'll get the balls up to Ironside and play off him with Smith and Harvey Nibbs and guys like that. And they'll put crosses into the box. So they've got that. And they've got the confidence of the win at Portman Road last year. But their away form hasn't been as good. They did lose at Oxford. They lost at Portsmouth. And they drew at Charlton. So, fascinating game. I mean, it's a derby of sorts because I'm from this part of the world. And I think it might have been used to be known as the A604 derby. No, that was Cambridge Colchester. It's the A14 derby. I think that might be what it is. But Ipswich will be embarrassed to have lost to Cambridge last time, and they want to put it right this time.
Never a proper derby if you're naming it after an A road.
You're right. Yeah.
Not having that. Speaking of derbies, though, there's a lesser spotted London one. In League Two this weekend, AFC Wimbledon hosting Leighton Orient. It's just the third ever league meeting between the pair and the first since 2016. Back-to-back league defeats to nil makes this an important, if very tough-looking game for the Dons, Adrian.
Yeah, they had Drew Blanks, didn't they, against Barrow and Stockport. I don't think they give much away, AFC Wimbledon. I think I was looking at the chances that they've conceded in open play, and they're only five behind the best in the division, which is Salford City. So they're not giving up that many opportunities to other teams. They're keeping the ball much better now. It's a big, big style change under Jacko, and there's a bit more patience about the way they play. And they've got good forward players. You know, Asal is a good player, Young Coombs and Davison as well. They've all got goals in them. But it's just not clicking at the moment. And this is tough. I think I would make Leighton Orient favourites in any match that they go into at the moment. So the Dons are going to have to play very well, I think, to get something from this game.
Yeah, the Orient Express chewing its way through the league so far. Sam, top 1-6-7, undefeated, scored the joint most, conceded the joint fewest. It's all going swimmingly, basically.
It is. I spoke to Richie Wellens on a radio show the other day, and he slaughtered me off the bat. I said something very, very interesting about the dearth of the target man in the lower leagues, and how everyone's playing this academy ticker tacker stuff, even in League Two. And he responded with something like, "Well, you were really poor as a target man, Sam." So something along those lines. I can't even remember how he got it in, but he got it. He got a jibe in. To much amusement from the host, but they've been really good. Obviously, I think improved defensively the tail end of last year, and I think obviously they've started brilliantly in that regard. Four clean sheets. The goalkeeper Vigouroux is outstanding. I think Richie's been talking him up no end. So that's the first thing. Good experience through the spine with Beckles and Darren Prattley, George Moncur. That gives them a solid base. But I think, and from speaking to him, really pleased with the forward players. I think in transition, in counter-attacks, they've already scored a couple of counter-attacking goals. Smith, Kelman, Sotiriou, Archibald. I thought it was going to be his job to reinstall the confidence that had been lost in the front players. And I was kind of thinking about Drinnen and Smith was my thought process coming back into this season. And Smith's moved on. Drinnen's not featuring at the moment. So these guys, I think, have made a big difference. And he probably didn't have too much of a job on his hands because Smith, disabled by injury last few seasons, Sotiriou around it, but not playing much. And And obviously, Kelman's come in from QPR. So those guys are giving them real power in the front positions. I don't see many teams at that level having as much creativity and goal threat as Leighton Orient. So got it right at one end, and it's really coming together in the forward positions. And I say all this, having read a lot about them being solid rather than spectacular. So I think there's probably more to come from Orient as well.
Lots of good games coming up this weekend. We'll go through the best of them on next week's pod. Right, nearly done for today. A couple of things I noticed, though. First of all, Sam, I wanted to get your take on what I think is the tweet of the week, or certainly a notable tweet. It comes from Wes Fodderingham, Sheffield United goalkeeper. I've got to say, there's a big trend at the moment for footballers actually putting a picture of them during the game in the tweet, which I suspect is not their own handiwork. I think they might be having some help. So a bit of a cheat. But here's what Wes says. Top away performance from the boys today, Flames, then the Flames emoji, then some Blades emojis, 3 points, tick emoji, clean sheet, tick emoji. How many points are you knocking off for the fact that he's obviously written Flames to get the emoji up, then forgotten to take the word Flames out and left it in the tweet? So they're both there.
I am partial to leaving a word in, especially on on WhatsApp when I'm going for an emoji. So I won't be too critical. I find that quite endearing, but it's a poor tweet. It's a poor tweet. Wes doesn't need me to tell him that, but he'll forever be remembered in my mind as the one who had the spat with Paolo Di Canio. Do you remember it? He subbed.
Who
him.
Is Wes? Yeah,
that yeah, one. League One Wes. Yeah, yeah. Subbed him in the first half or whatever it was, and he booted a water bottle about 40 yards. But similarly to Lawrence Figueroa, ex Swindon and top quality stopper. So he'll come back from this. I'll give him a bit of stick, but he'll come back.
Quick follow-up question. Ben Osborne of Sheffield United is sort of was the first to reply, and he's just put top drawly, but he spelt draw, D-R-A-W. Now, for me, is it draw or is it draw, as in the top draw, as in with an E-R on the end?
No, sorry, I'm lost. He's called Wes Fodderingham Lee.
Yeah, that's the more pertinent thing, I think.
Do you know what? I didn't even notice that.
I mean, maybe that's a nickname, but yeah, it should be draw, as in with ER on the end. I don't like to criticise Ben Osborne because he's a former Forest Player of the Year, but still.
It's important we raise that, yeah.
Yeah, bad weekend social media-wise for Sheffield United, if not on the pitch. I wonder if Paul had a good weekend. I don't know if you two saw this. On Friday night, on the big screen during the West Brom-Burnley game, up popped the message, Deb, will you marry me? Love, Paul Smedekend. Absolutely no commas or full stops anywhere.
Punctuation.
Whatsoever. What's Paul thinking here? Didn't he want to use surnames because it seemed a bit too formal? Or was he worried there were other couples called Deb and Paul in attendance? If so, why wouldn't they also be in the Smedic end? I've got lots of questions, Adrian, and not many answers. And I just hope that Deb gave the right one.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a messy message. I'm disappointed in West Brom for not correcting the lack of a capital E on end, little things like that. I think they could have sub edited it a little bit better. It just looked really shoddy, as if it just typed it out in 5 seconds or so, and something like that. You've got to put a bit of effort in. I'd have said no if I was Deb.
Not my favourite engagement of the season so far. Did anyone see the Roma supporter?
So
proposed to his girlfriend pitch side in front of Jose. I think after a training session, which makes it even better.
Yeah, real cringe stuff. I do like the idea of putting messages for our partners up on the big screens at football games, though. If I were to do so, it would just say, Amy, please turn off the lights in the kitchen when you leave the room. There's an energy crisis, although she could quite rightly say, well, you're using energy by putting that on the big screen, thus defeating the purpose. We better get out of here before this gets out of control. Remember to tell a friend that we're here, please. Drop us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods as well. That will really help. And generally, spread the word. We really do appreciate it. We thank you for your kind comments and for listening so far. We'll be back with another show next week. You can follow us on Twitter at EFLWhatThe. And if you'd like to sponsor the show, just drop us an email to whattheefl@yahoo.com. We are obliged to Dean Ashton for joining us earlier. Thanks to Sam and Adrian and to producer Marley for knocking it all together. We'll catch up with you again same time next week. For now, though, from all of us here, it's goodbye.